You're listening to the Missional Marketing Podcast, a show for church leaders, church communications professionals, and ministry volunteers. Our goal is to help your church grow by leveraging digital marketing and effective communications.
We operated, much like a lot of you, on some stress, and it wasn't healthy. And Jesus did not build his church so we could live in a bunch of stress-based, no margin kind of thing. That's not what the plan A was.
Welcome to episode number 178 of the Missional Marketing Podcast. My name is Bart Blair, and I am joined by the CEO of Missional Marketing, Mr. Jason Hamrock. Hello, Jason.
Hi, Bart. Happy 178th episode.
It is the 178th episode. We're cruising along here in 2026. Our goal is, if we don't do anything else, to break 200. There's a 200 barrier. That's Carl George, right? Carl George wrote the church growth book on breaking barriers. The 200 barrier was a barrier. We've been working towards 200 for quite a while, but we're going to break that barrier in 2026.
We are.
Thanks for those of you who are tuning in. If you're tuning in for the very first time, please be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcast so that you don't miss future episodes. We aim to release an episode every Friday, and oftentimes our aim is off. So if you're subscribed, you won't miss future episodes, because when we do release them, they will just be delivered to your mobile device. If you're watching on our YouTube channel, surely there's something better you can watch while you're listening to the podcast, but whatever. Thanks for tuning in on the YouTube channel.
Stay dialed in.
Our goal with this podcast is to help churches grow by leveraging digital marketing and effective communications. We spend most of our time talking about marketing. Our company is called what?
Missional Marketing.
We're called Missional Marketing. So we talk a lot about marketing. We break our audiences from a church communications standpoint into, we call them three rings. You call them three rings. I don't know if you coined this, but you taught it to me. Three rings, three concentric circles. Ring one, the center circle. Those are your people. They're your church people. Second circle in those concentric circles are people in your community actively looking for a church. And then the third ring is everybody else in your community who's maybe not necessarily looking for a church, but they're using the internet or they're using AI to problem solve. They're looking to DIY some problem in their life. And we want to help you intersect with ring three people and with ring two people. But today, we're going to do something a little bit different. We don't talk about ring one a lot, but I want to pick your brain today, Jason, on communication priorities in the church with ring one. Those are your people who are in your church management software. They follow you on social media. Hopefully they're showing up on Sunday mornings, at least sometimes. And you have a lot of experience in the church communication space. For our audience that might be new, or maybe they've forgotten, why don't you share a little bit about your background, how you got into ministry, and what you did before you became the CEO of Missional Marketing?
Yeah, I laugh because God has a great sense of humor to really lay out the journey of my life. Looking back, he was all over it. And my wife and I, we moved to Arizona. We got married and we started going to a pretty large church for the time. This is almost 30 years ago. And we found ourselves falling in love with Central Christian Church of Arizona. And I started volunteering and serving. I remember one day there was this ministry fair in the courtyard. You could go find just a ministry that you think that God's wired you for. And I look over and I'm like, oh, it says marketing. That's interesting. So I walk over to that booth and get to know the people. And I just immediately, it's the people you just immediately become like really good friends with, because you just, they're like you. That's who I met. And next thing I know, I'm actually helping to start and pioneer a communications department. This didn't exist. And so this is very, very early on in the church days when church communication directors, I mean, there's just a very few. And so I started volunteering and I started serving a little bit. Next thing you know, they asked, would I come on as a contractor, just spend a few hours, they'll pay me for this and actually establish a comms team. I thought, sure. I had no idea what it would be like working at a church and doing this. So over the course of a couple of years, I would take a couple steps forward and one step back. And that's where I learned the phrase, hey, you're going to fail, at least fail forward, because you're going, and that's okay. Failure is a really great tool for you to learn from. You never really learn from your successes. You always learn from your failure. You should be. And so I did that. And then after a while, they're like, won't you just pull up a chair and stay here full time? So I did. And I spent 11 years as a communication director at Central, and I went through it all.
So Central, give us a little bit of context of what the church looked like when you got there and what it looked like when you left, because it was very different.
Yeah, it was. You know, when I first got there, we were on one campus and running a, you know, couple thousand, 2,500 people or so. And it was growing. Cal Jernigan was our new lead pastor. He'd been on staff for a while. And he's such a great communicator. So just Cal alone, our church was growing because he had such important things to say and God was working through him. But the ministry as a whole, the church as a whole, was just really sweet. A lot of joy. Everybody loved coming to Central. So you got to work in a place where the staff was unified and the congregation was on fire for God. And we had a phenomenal worship band. So you had a really great, you know, core of what was going on there. But we had big plans. And so we actually relocated and we were going to relocate to another city in the Phoenix area. We actually ended up purchasing a bunch of land and we built basically two hubs. We didn't realize at the time, but we built two hubs instead of just a, you know, building another campus. It was like another hub of Central. And the goal was to build that campus. We had 165 acres.
Wow.
So imagine what we were going to build a master big plan and just go all out. Well, that changed. And we thought, about that time, my good friend, Jim Tomberlin, we both know Jim. Jim's the multi-site guy. We had him in and he's thinking, yeah, you guys may not want to build that 7,000 seat worship center in Gilbert, even though that probably would have worked because there's so many people, just the model was different. So during my time at Central, it changed from having like two hubs to let's have two campuses, let's add a third campus and a fourth campus and a fifth campus and so on and so forth. And so that's what we did. And also during my time, I went from, it was just me and another person. We knew what we were doing a little bit, not much. And by the time I left, we had a full team. So I got to grow my budget and my staff over those years. And so our attendance, which just shot through the roof, we probably all tripled basically by the time I left. And it was still my home church. It was my home church for 25 years for my wife and I. We recently moved over to another church, not because anything wrong with Central, just a new change. But Central is a phenomenal, phenomenal church.
Okay, so clear picture here. Larger church, fast-growing church. Yeah. I'm going to guess a lot of ministry happening, a lot of ministry opportunities. You know, it's kind of interesting. I don't know what the model at Central was, but, you know, you're talking about, you know, our early 2000s, and many churches, especially those that had somewhat of an attractional base to them, would spin up a lot of ministries, a lot of different kinds of ministries to minister to a lot of different kinds of people. I think in recent years, a lot of churches have started to learn that simplicity can actually go a long way. So maybe not quite as many ministries, but in your heyday, at Central's heyday at that time, lots and lots of competing ministries. From your experience, Jason, what were some of the biggest challenges that you faced when you were trying to balance communication requests from all these different ministries that were all vying for the congregation's attention? We've got all these people. We all have a message that we want to deliver. How were you navigating everything that was coming in and deciding what got airplay and what didn't?
Well, I got to be honest with you. In the early days, I just said yes to everything.
Okay.
I didn't have a backbone to say no. And I don't know if it was because I didn't feel like I had the clout to be able to say no. You know, I felt like I needed to please people, right? So you just say yes to that and not realizing what you just said yes to. And it quickly backfired, because when I would say yes to the ministries and something would happen, even, and we did everything we could, but that event or that group, it would fall flat. If it fell flat, then they would blame marketing. And I just remember in those early years of, I wasn't on the leadership team yet. And the leadership team would go off and meet and then come back. And my boss would say, well, hey, did you feel the tires running over your face this whole week? I'm like, what are you talking about? Yeah, you got thrown under the bus a lot. What? Yeah. Ministries were just sort of saying, hey, this thing failed just because communications didn't really help us out as much as they said they would. I'm going, oh. So I learned a ton of, you got to have some structure. And I didn't really know this walking into this role. I didn't realize it was cutthroat. I also didn't realize it was super political. It was really political in a sense of, hey, what do I need to do to make sure I'm in that announcement? Or what do I need to do to get sure I'm talked about on the stage? You know, it's like, what can you do for me? I'll do for you kind of stuff. And I realized that if I said no to them, all they would do is go to the executive pastor and say, yeah, Hamrock said we can't do that. Can you go talk to him and tell him? So sure enough, hey, we really need, what can you do to help push that? Okay, well, the executive pastor's walking in my office. Oh, yes, sir. I mean, I had so much of that I learned, okay, this isn't working. And you can't just be, you know, you can't make friends, you know, in the sense of like, oh, if you're my best friend, just come tell me, I'll take care of you. You can't do that because it's going to backfire. Mm-hmm. You can't make promises you don't keep. You can't even control what you're going to keep. I couldn't control what was going to be said on stage. So I had to learn to create margin and create boundaries and create tiers, which we'll probably get into.
Yeah. One of the things that we've said before on this podcast is that, you know, every minister in your church, whether in your large church or small church, whether you're talking about staff ministers or lay ministers, every minister's ministry is the most important ministry in the church to them. And you want it to be. You sure want the women's ministry leader to believe that the women's ministry is the most important ministry in the church.
They're on fire. Yep.
Yeah, you want the children's ministry director or the children's minister to believe that the children's ministry is the most important ministry, right? That's what you want. But obviously, not every ministry is moving the needle in every season in the same way for people's both spiritual growth as well as the church's growth. Let's pivot and talk about your tiered system. I do have a question here I want to get to in just a minute about discerning the difference between urgency versus importance. And I'm going to table that for just a second. I don't know if that fits into the tiers, but let's talk a little bit about how you tiered different ministries and how that played out in the structures you were creating.
It took time to learn this, but I kind of recognized that we were almost like an agency and we had clients. And I wanted to take care of my clients. That was my job. I mean, they're coworkers, but you get what I'm saying. Like we saw ourselves as we're here to serve you. We actually fell under the operation side of the church. We were in a ministry. We were under operations. So I got to see them as my clients. And so I thought to myself, well, self, if you had these clients you're looking at, who's number one, who's number two, who's number three? And that was easy, right? That was super easy. If the elders or Cal came asking for something, they got it. I mean, they're at the top of the food chain, right? The boss is walking in. The boss is walking in. You're going, yes, sir, what can I do for you? So everything else came to a standstill because he needed something, or the elders. And that was very rare on the elders, but you get what I'm saying there. Then I realized, well, after him, the weekend services. Now we had Saturday and Sunday services. So why do I call it the show? Well, it's what happens. This is where everybody gets together. So the weekend service became my number two client. If we needed to create something for the weekend, it got top priority. I mean, what are we supposed to say no to that to say yes to a global outreach trip thing?
And when you say weekend, you're specifically talking about the worship experience itself. And there are a lot of things that happen on the weekend, right? There's children's ministry. There might be Bible studies and Bible classes, but you're talking specifically about that 60, 75 minute worship experience in the big room with everybody together.
That's correct. And we always had our weekly rhythms. I'm talking like, you know, we have slides to create, or back in these days, it was make the bulletin. I'm talking about that extra.
I thought you were going to say back in those days, it was the transparencies, but that was a little before your time, right?
Well, I know about them, but that was before my time on staff. Yes. So, of course, we had our weekly rhythms, but it was when something needed to be done or ordered because, you know, weekend was going to do, the service was tied into Cal's message, or, oh, maybe it was all baptism weekend. And they decided to do that last minute because Cal had an idea and, okay, let's make that happen. Okay, now I got to pivot. I got to do some stuff, right? The weekend service in the worship center was my number two client for me after Cal and the elders.
Okay.
Yeah. After that, then I had to kind of figure out, well, where do we go from here? Well, in my opinion, it was anything that was all church related, like big events. So if it was Easter or Christmas, I know that happens in the room, but sometimes it happens outside too. What, you know, what do we need to do to get people in the courtyard? For us at Central, we have a Thanksgiving Eve service every year. So that's a Wednesday night. And so that was an all church thing. So we had to do things to prepare for that Wednesday. And I think that became my number three. So if it's all church, big event or anything like that, third most important client. After that, pick a card, any card. After that, it really was, I tried to make, well, I just followed our core values. Kids and students, we always place above adults, right? This is kind of an easy no-brainer. So kids and students became like pretty darn important to me. But right after that would be like small groups, which is adults. We had a men's ministry, a women's ministry. We had missions, local and global. We had care ministries. So they didn't really, it wasn't like I peck order all the way. Who was the last one? It wasn't really that. It was more of a cluster. It's like after kids and students, I'd have like adults, which you could tie in care, you could tie in global, you could tie in men's or women's, that kind of a thing that fit in there. And the goal was to make room for everybody. What, it wasn't like, sorry, you don't get anything. Everybody got an answer, and the answer was some sort of yes, we were here to serve you. You may not get the stage announcements you want because you reached like 10% of the room. Not going to happen. But what we can do is help you do A, B, and C. And so we kind of had to learn how to navigate that in those conversations and paint that picture. And I'll tell you, the biggest thing we did was time. Let's get in front of you early enough so that we're not crashing at Thursday. You're not coming into my office on Thursday. You need something by Saturday. The answer is going to be flat out no. Why did you wait so long? So that's that political thing where you really want to be building relationships with your ministry so that, hey, it's January. We're doing this in January. What's 2020? You should have already had this conversation. What does 2026 look like? Let's look at your church, you know, your wide calendar for the whole year and break it down by quarters, first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, because I also put in there some structure to say, hey, if you want something, you can't come to us the week of. You got to come to us at least 2 to 3 weeks out for something minimal. If it's bigger, I need 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah. I want to just kind of double click on one thing that you said there, because I want to make sure that our audience actually hears and understands what you meant. You said that an announcement probably won't get stage time that only hits a small percentage of people in the room. And I'll use this as an example, because I see this one in churches a lot. We have a MOPS group. We have a Mother of Preschoolers ministry, and we're a church of 300, and that might be 10 to 15 moms in our entire congregation. The MOPS ministry is not likely to get a platform pulpit announcement on Sunday morning, because in a church of 300 people, we're only talking about 10 or 15 people that we're communicating to. I think sometimes I'm going to say something that's going to sound a little bit harsh. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think our ministers are more concerned with just making sure that everybody in the church knows that we're doing stuff, more so than actually effectively communicating to the people who most need to know what's happening, when it's happening, and where they're supposed to be. And so there's a little bit of a tension there. I've seen that happen. It's like that person who leads that particular ministry, while they want their ministry to be effective, they also want the whole church body to know about the ministry that they're doing, even though not everyone can or will participate in it. So those are some more of those political and relational things that you have to kind of navigate.
So I tell you what, so like that's a perfect example. Mothers of Preschoolers, where there's only so many of those in your church, and you're probably right, it's 10, 15% maybe. You should know that. And I didn't used to get to know this because we didn't have sophisticated church management systems back in the day. Today, you should know all the moms who have children that are in that age group. Yeah. And by the way, you do know, and they know other girlfriends who have kids of the same age. So that's how you can really impact that ministry by doing that. However, on the flip side of that, if we're doing a women's conference, well, that's likely half the room. So the women's conference is going to get an all church from the stage because it reaches half the room.
Yeah.
And I can say the same thing about men. If it's some, you know, we're going to do a young, you know, young adult men's thing, we're not mentioning that. But if we're doing a men's conference, we are going to mention it. So the key here, guys, is that you don't want to have to establish those rules and those boundaries yourself. What you want to do is write them out and go get blessed by your leadership.
Yeah.
When you get blessed by the lead pastor and the executive pastor and the staff agrees to, yeah, these are the terms and this is kind of the parameters of how we're going to decide what gets a stage announcement versus what doesn't. You want that coming from the top down. You do not want to think you have the clout to say, I've decided. No, don't do that. You will regret that.
Yeah, I think if you build the systems and the structures and then you stick with them, it makes it a lot easier for you to get the blessing of your lead pastor and the other ministers in the church. Let's talk a little bit about the mechanisms for communication. We've talked a lot, you know, you mentioned the bulletin. A lot of churches still do bulletins. You know, you talked about stage announcements. Hey, here's one of my biggest pet peeves. I'm just going to, because I have the microphone here, I'm going to share it. One of my biggest pet peeves is going to a church where they have announcement time during the service and they basically read the whole bulletin. Please don't do that. If your church is doing that, please stop doing that. The reason you print the bulletin is so that people can actually take the bulletin and know what's going on in the church. You don't have to read every stinking announcement that's in the bulletin. Okay, I've said it. Get it off my chest. Now, let's think about, okay, you've got all these ministry priorities. You've created, you know, categories for these different ministry priorities. What are the mechanisms by which I love what you said there. We're trying to say yes to everyone in terms of helping them promote their ministry, but not every yes is going to equal an announcement from the stage on Sunday. We have the bulletin, we have email, we have social media, we might have text messaging. How do you prioritize those platforms in the way that you're using them to communicate different ministry things?
So such a great question. So first of all, wrap your arms around all the different tools you have in your tool bag, right? And some have more volume than others. Right? Stage announcement on Sunday morning. No, you maybe get two, maybe one, two, and in rare occasions, three. But guess what? On social media, you could do like two or three a day. And so you have more bandwidth with some tools, less bandwidth with others. You know, a text announcer or something like in do an SMS thing. You might get one a week. Type of thing. So be careful who you give that to, right? And I would just say some things are just off limits. We talked about the tiers, like lead pastor, worship, you know, that kind of thing. On the other side of it, I would definitely break it down to what is kind of, we can call it a tier A, a tier B, tier C, tier D. If it's like all church, we pull out all the stops. They're going to get an app something in the app. They're going to get a text message. They're going to get email. They're going to get stage. They're going to get, maybe the lead pastor is going to talk about it, right? It's that important, right? That's easy to do. But if it gets down to like mothers of preschoolers, you don't even get a stage announcement. So it's not even in, it's whatever's in this D tier that you get. And now we can figure out, well, when is your event? Oh, it's in June. Okay. So we want to maybe start promoting this at the end of April or maybe May. We'll have a touch point here, a touch point there, a touch point there. Oh, we're going to give you some digital assets so your people in your ministry can share them with their friends. That type of a thing. So it really is understand what's in your tool bag, but not every tool gets used by every section. So just map that out and you share that with the ministries all the time, not just once. Then they understand, oh, okay, yeah, Jason, we're a D and we have this. So can you work on a plan to help us with that? I sure can. It makes it easier. Now, if they come to you, oh, we're having that event next weekend. Is there anything we could do? No, you didn't plan accordingly. Why didn't you come to me back in November? You know, that's this, because then we have a tendency to go, well, I'll tell you what, just this once. Don't do that. You are, any of you have kids? These are like kids. You don't just let your kids get away from some stuff. They will steal the whole thing. You can't do that. You have to treat them like kids.
It's really hard though, because you feel like when you're saying no, you've got a life raft and you're telling people that they can't get on the life raft, right? It's like, how do we decide who gets on and who doesn't get on? And it's tricky. It is really tricky, right?
Okay, quicker. Now, it is hard, but I'll tell you, if you set those boundaries right with love, right? And you do it with grace, but truth, you know, Jesus was a master at that. He was full of grace and truth. You got to try and manage that well. If you mismanage that, you're going to fail as a comm director because you're going to create your own problems where burnout is going to happen. I'm telling you, I've seen it all the time.
Yeah. Let me just kind of expand on that particular messaging that you're talking about, not the burnout, but on the volume and the frequency of communication. How can a comms director help their ministry leaders and their ministry team understand that effective communication isn't necessarily about volume and frequency, but it's more about strategic messaging that moves people to action? So it's the right messaging in the right timing on the right platform, not necessarily just like blasting it with a megaphone all the time. What are some of the conversations or what are some of the things that we can do to help our ministers adapt a policy or a process that makes their communication more strategic and more effective?
Man, that's such a great question. It's so hard because every culture is different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
it's going to be different in a church of 100 people versus a church of 1,000 versus a church of 10,000, right?
100%. Yeah. So, I mean, all I know is kind of the mega church space, right? And everybody's trying to jockey for that position. It's really hard. You have to use the context of your own culture. But I'll tell you this. I think the most effective way to engage, and this is internal, this is ring one people, is through story. Change lives. Why we're in the business of helping people to love God, love people, and make disciples. And that's our job as the church. And as a comms team, our job is to support our leaders in the mission of the church, create disciples. Okay. Well, if you're creating disciples, that means you're creating apprentices of Jesus, which means God's in your life, which means you have a changed life, right? So I did this, but not nearly as much as I teach it these days because I've evolved in this. And that is, you want to tell stories. So making an announcement is fine, but why not tell a story through that? So we used to do this huge fireworks show on the 4th of July. Huge. We'd get 25,000 people in our park. We had our campus and a park right next to us. And it was amazing. It was so good. We didn't have a hard time. We didn't really have a hard time getting people to show up to that thing. What we did have a hard time was getting volunteers. We need a lot of volunteers. And so instead of just saying, hey, we need you to, you know, not enjoy the 4th of July with your family, but come and serve. It's, by the way, we're in Phoenix. It's like 118 degrees. It's hotter than crud. You know, you're wore out, you're burnt out. But we're asking you to do that instead of go be with your family. Well, who's going to say yes to that? Instead, what we should have done, I didn't do this, but what I would do if I could go back in time was tell some stories. Tell some stories of people that committed to serve at our Fire in the Sky program and what it meant for them and what they got out of it. And I'll tell you, there's some amazing stories. Oh, man. I got to meet this person. I got to pray with that person. I was worn out. It was the best feeling I've had in a long, long time, right? You want to tell stories, and then you promote the event through the story. And so if I could give you any kind of like advice, it would be take the time to learn about what kind of impact is this going to make on the people who are going to attend this thing, and tell stories if you've got them around that stuff works so well because that's what we're attracted to.
I love that. I think that that's the challenge that you present to the people who are coming to you who just want more volume and more visibility is you say, hey, go and find the person in your ministry whose life has been impacted the most by this event, this activity, this connection, and let's record a short story, a short video, or let me do an interview with them. Let's find a way to tell their story. I love that. The last question that I have on the list here, I think you just answered it. I jotted down some questions to ask you today. And that was, if you could look back on your time serving in your role, what one a practice would you have implemented earlier in your career as a comms director that would have actually helped you be more effective in your role? I think you just answered that. You would have told more stories.
I would have told more stories through that for sure. I also would have said no more often.
Okay.
I think by telling somebody no, it might hurt at first, but we know that's the best answer. It's going to help both of us down the road because we're not going to be faced. Because guys, we realize this, right? So ministries will come to us at the last minute, and they think, "Well, you can do this, right?" And you're going, "Oh, this is stressing me out." Well, they're stressed out too. So we understand this. Like they're on pins and needles about trying to pull off this event. They didn't plan accordingly. And now they're asking you to jump into that bandwagon to have everybody have stress now. We know that's not healthy. So I would definitely have said no more often, which would have trained them more to say, I need to come to Jason earlier. I need to meet with him earlier. And I would have done a probably better job of going, hey, let's meet at least every 2 weeks for 30 minutes. We're going to touch base on what's going on this week or next month, or just start looking at the plan. Keep that relationship going. I'm not just going to wait for you to submit a project jacket or a project ticket, right? We do that. We fill out the form when you need something. We'll take care of it. No. Go meet with them so you know what's coming up. I would have gotten ahead of that because that would have given me more margin because we operated, much like a lot of you, on some stress and it wasn't healthy. Sometimes it was okay, but boy, there's seasons. It was tough. It was tough sledding. This is the worst, by the way. We had to go to your team to say, hey, yeah, I can't have you go home until that's done. Right? That's painful. Nobody wants to live in that. And Jesus did not build his church so we could live in a bunch of stress-based, no margin kind of thing. That's not what the plan A was.
Now, I'm listening to you say this, I'm putting myself in the seat of a comms director who's listening to this right now. And this is what I believe. There's somebody out there that's thinking this. That's all well and good. And I think I have the guts to say no, but I have a senior pastor who doesn't ever say no. And for me to get buy-in from my senior pastor, I'm going to need someone to advocate for me. And here's why I want to close this today. If you've found this coaching and this insight from Jason to be helpful today, we do these live events. We call them church communications roadshows that are basically 8 hours of drinking from a fire hose on all things communications, marketing, AI, all this stuff. Jason teaches a little bit more on this particular topic at those roadshows. You need to find the nearest roadshow to you and you need to bring your senior pastor with you to that roadshow. In fact, if you come to one of our roadshows this year and you can get your senior pastor, executive pastor to come with you, we will comp their ticket. We will let the senior pastor, executive pastor come for free. You pay for your own ticket and you bring them for free. We'll give them lunch and all the training and we will advocate for you. If you can't get to one of our road shows, or maybe the timing just doesn't work well for you, you can schedule a call with one of our coaches and we can talk about how we can coach you and your leadership team to put a strategic plan together that you can all agree to and then bring some accountability to that. Jason, where are some of the cities that we're having road shows here in 2026?
Well, we're going to Florida in March. So we'll be in Orlando and Tampa. Okay. We're heading to Cincinnati, Indianapolis. I think it's in May. Maybe that's a little bit later. We're also going to
North Carolina and South Carolina. I know
South Carolina there. We're going to be heading back to Texas. We are doing two national road shows. They're going to be via Zoom.
Okay,
because there's so many churches that are in remote areas that just can't get to a road show. But I tell you, that's going to be a lot of fun. So you could always do that. But I will. Kind of double click there on what you said there. The first thing I'll say to you guys is, first of all, you got the Holy Spirit. So I would be bathing this in prayer about how to approach your leadership about, hey, I need to get some more structure. I'm burnt out. But I'll tell you, you don't want to just do that flippantly. You don't just kind of, can I schedule a meeting with you and then walk in not prepared. You want to walk in prepared. You want to walk in going, here's some things I need to share about what's going on, why it's going on, what it's doing to me, what it's doing to my team, if you have a team. And here's my plan for how to get out of this. Will you take a look at this? Will you tweak it? And will you bless it? You don't just, you have to start there. And if you don't fight for yourself, you won't win. And I can certainly step in, and I do this a lot, to talk with leadership about, and I'll just call them out, by the way, I have nothing to lose. I'm an advocate for you. And I have nothing to lose, but I always say, you got to have a plan. And every plan, it doesn't, if it sits on a shelf, it's no good. It's got to be put into practice, and every plan will adjust. But I'll tell you what, you're going to miss every shot you don't take. So let's take a shot.
Very good. You can find out more about our roadshows at the website churchcommunications.com. I'll link to the roadshow page in the show notes here. And Jason, this has been great. I've enjoyed having this conversation. I've heard you tell so many different stories over the years you and I have been working together about your time in the trenches. And I know that when we do our road shows and you share a little bit of your story and give people some insight into some of your experience, it always seems to really resonate with them. They're like, oh, we have a friend in Jason because he knows the seat we've sat in, that we're sitting in. And I think that our audience will really appreciate that. This, I think, has been a very successful 178th episode of the Missional Marketing Podcast. Fun. So if it's been helpful for you, please make sure that you share it with a friend, a ministry colleague, somebody that you know. And if you haven't ever left us a rating or a review wherever you listen, that would be helpful too. On behalf of Jason Hamrock, I'm Bart Blair, and this has been another episode of the Missional Marketing Podcast. This podcast is a production of Missional Marketing. Our goal is to help churches grow by leveraging digital marketing and effective communications. For more information, visit our website at missionalmarketing.com.